Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Get fired up for Spirit Fire Radio with your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer. Get ready to shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in these modern times. Bring purpose to your life through practical spirituality and add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. Now, here are your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Spirit Fire Radio and a brand new month. I am here with my delightful co-host, Dr. Dorothy Riddle. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, Steve. Delighted to be here.
Indeed. And to be starting a new month, July is going to be all about non-linearity. I probably shouldn't even put a month in there, right? Because that's just so finite, right? So each month here on Spirit Fire Radio, we're talking about a principle, a universal principle that when we learn how to utilize it, when we go deeper into it, discover its qualities, we can use these principles as a tool, as a way to participate greater, to find our purpose and to utilize these tools in our day-to-day existence. So thus far, Dorothy, right, we've talked about interconnectedness. We have talked about participation, and now on to non-linearity. So we're talking about what is, and what is seems to be sort of all over the place as we talk about non-linearity, right? It's always in flux, as we're going to discover this month. So it's going to be a great adventure because both Dorothy and I have noted that this is a very complex subject because we talk about things like time. We talk about quantum theory just a bit. And it can all be very complex and scientific, but as we've said many times in the past, this beautiful melding of science and spirituality is really something of our day and can be very enlightening and fun. So may it be so, right, Dorothy?
Yes, absolutely.
So wonderful. Well, let's start off with a quote. I know you have one, and I just look forward to diving in.
Okay. I've got two to start us off, but let's start with the first one. If you hit a tuning fork twice as hard, it will ring twice as loud, but still at the same frequency. That's a linear response. If you hit a person twice as hard, they are unlikely to just shout twice as loud. And I picked this, Steve, because we've been talking about the fact that quantum physics keeps underscoring for us that our universe is not deterministic; it is probabilistic. There's a mist of possibilities, and our experience comes when we precipitate one of those possibilities. So here in this quote, if I wouldn't want to hit someone, but if I hit someone twice as hard, that person has a lot of choices. They could choose not to respond at all. They could choose to respond exponentially more than I would expect them to. So we do live in a universe of free will, free choice. And we are responsible for creating our reality. That's what we spent all last month talking about. And so that carries over into how we experience time.
Wonderful. And I just, what arises in me as I hear you sort of interpreting that is this idea of subjectivity, that free will is indeed very important. And we all have a way in which we would respond to certainly being hit twice as hard than what, I don't know, right?
Right.
But that there are options, and we've talked about that. And this fact that we are all interconnected means that that hit is going to have a response, but that response has got lots of different possibilities, and that there will be a response, but who could really say what it will be? And then it brings to mind this idea of participation, that how we participate is really important. You know, how will we participate in what is unfolding, for instance? So mm-hmm. Very good. Nice.
Right. And the second quote I wanted to share is from Albert Einstein. He wrote, "The only reason for time is so that everything doesn't happen at once." And this is, I will admit to you right up front, Steve, I have a little trouble wrapping my head around this. I have worked on it for years. But time really is just an intellectual concept that we create in order to sequence our experience, in order to measure it, in order to compare it. It does not exist as an objective fact. Mm. And we've talked before about Newtonian physics and the deterministic cause and effect concepts that come from Newtonian physics, including that there is this objective world out there that exists separate from us. And we know in so many ways that that's actually not true. And so we can think about, it's even called Newtonian time, which says that events occur in sequence in an independent dimension. But in reality, time doesn't exist. It's just a construct that we use to understand what's going on. On a certain level, everything is happening at once.
Well, and that is the beauty of quantum physics and the theory of relativity, and that in the beauty that you would bring Albert Einstein into this, because he married the two, if I'm not mistaken, in this idea that time was a constant, this Newtonian idea that time existed, there was a beginning and an end, that matter was malleable, but that it followed this same pattern. And the theory of relativity put those two together and actually gave time a shape, which mm-hmm. is interesting from our perspective. So, it's like time is subjective, that it has to do with our perception of it.
That's right. And one of the things that, you know, when I was doing research for my books on the Enough for Us All series, one of the things that I learned that I had not learned when I studied memory in graduate school is that our memories are not static. I had somehow thought of them as like photographs, right, that get filed away in a filing cabinet, and then we can bring them out and look at them again. But in actuality, our experience is stored all over our body. The smell, the taste, the auditory all gets stored different places. And then when we remember something, we bring it all back and we create a gestalt. And that gestalt is affected by the context in which we remember it. We may remember it in a context where it frightens us. And so then it starts to have this particular emotional tincture. Or in a context that delights us and it has another emotional tincture. So memories are not static. That's why police departments, for example, try to get what happened in a particular incident recorded as soon as possible before it starts being changed. And in fact, our brain tries to help us because we're storing all of this material by kind of snipping off the edges of a memory that don't fit very well with other memories. So there's this constant adjustment going on that even below the level of awareness. So what we remember is not necessarily what somebody else would have said at the time, or even us ourselves at the time would have said was happening.
Or as we've seen it, right? You know, I find that it is, you take this snippet of a memory And then when you insert or you take into consideration everything that has happened since and the state of who we are today, which has unfolded, and we put it back in motion, that it appears very different. This same snapshot looks completely different. It always reminds me of a movie reel in that we've got this perception as something is moving and in flow in the now that it is actually real. But actually, if we slow the movie down and we just take one frame out, it's actually a still frame. So it's as if life is just all of these memories, all of these perceptions, everything put into motion that sort of creates the reality of our now. And when you think of a memory, when you go back and you really focus your mind on it, you can almost sense that time in the present moment is standing still. It's as if you're in a weird way going back in time and holding time still, but it's tinctured by everything we've experienced since. And then we put it back into this version of our new now, and it again tinctures it, right? It's why sort of letting go of the past can be such a sort of a healthy thing to do, right? To constantly live in the now, because that's all there really is, huh?
Well, also, I'd like to share a personal experience. I may have shared this before with our audience, but I think it's very relevant to our discussion today. And to me, what it illustrates is not only that memories are not static, but also the importance of our own participation and the fact that we can heal and change what has gone before. So when I was growing, I grew up in northern India, and I went into boarding school when I was very young. And at that time, my father was very, very seriously ill with hepatitis. In fact, they thought for about 4 or 5 months that he might not survive. And so he was he was moved from one hospital to another. You can imagine my mother was very preoccupied with what was going to happen to him. I was the oldest child. My brother and sister were even younger, so she had their care. And I was just starting school. I loved school. I wanted to be in school. I didn't want to move off to this other hospital, so I asked to go into boarding. However, my young mind took that experience and created this scenario where I had to take care of myself and my mother had her hands full with the rest of the family. And so I really distanced myself from her for years. And then one day, I will still remember, I was 29 years old. I was sitting in the living room with her. And for some reason, we were talking about that period of time. And I realized that at that time, she had been 26. She was younger than I was at that time. She had this seriously ill husband who was an hour's hike through the mountains away from her at a hospital. And when she was at the hospital, she felt like she should be with her kids. When she was with her kids, she felt like she should be at the hospital. She was in this terrible situation. And in that moment, I felt such empathy and compassion for her that my whole memory and feeling about my childhood shifted. And from that day forward, I have never, ever been able to feel myself into that sense of separation and isolation that I had kind of hugged to myself in my earlier life. And that was a very profound demonstration to me of how the past can actually shift, and our memory of the past can actually change in a very qualitative way.
And almost liberated from the constraints of time, right? It's almost like you were set free, that if you thought about that time, wow, it really was almost, I could sense it would just drag, right? And you're right. Liberated in a sense to a higher vibration, a higher vibrational relationship, and mm-hmm. set free in a way from the constraints of that past. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lovely. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that, Dorothy. Hey, listen, we're at our first break already.
And, oh, my goodness. Okay.
Yeah, we get back. I look forward to continuing this conversation. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Barbara Scheidegger, clinical hypnotherapist and founder of Swiss Hypnotherapy. And this is a tip with purpose. Being wrong or making mistakes is human. What have you learned from it? Start laughing about the silly things you did. Yeah, laugh about it. Being happy is more important than being always right. Start listening to your feedback. Be willing to redefine yourself every day. Communication with yourself and others who already are successful in their lives. Stay balanced. And when you fall off the wagon, don't dwell on it. Just hop back on. Forgive yourself. Admit what you did. Move on and smile. I hope this tip helps you. You can reach me at 323-999-4775 or at my website at swisshypnotherapy.com.
Please join us for a transformational conference with five, that's right, five of the leading pioneers in the fields of science and spirituality, all in one place. Join best-selling authors and teachers Greg Braden, Dr. Bruce Lipton, Lynn McTaggart, Dr. Joe Dispenza, and Lee Carroll in both individual workshops as well as a weekend of keynote presentations and panel discussions. At this extraordinary event, you'll get to experience some of the brightest leaders of our world today, empowering you with groundbreaking new information, deep wisdom, and practical tools to transform your life. Come connect with others and expand your consciousness in beautiful Nanaimo on Vancouver Island in British Columbia, June 14th through 19th. For more information or to register for what some are expecting to be one of the best conferences of 2018, visit shalohaproductions.com. That's S-H-A-L-O-H-A productions.com. Or visit the individual speakers' websites.
Conscious Confidence Radio, a timeless wisdom with Sarah Main. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio and join Sarah on an adventurous journey to the deeper level of meaning to move beyond today's world of constant change, confusion, and uncertainty beyond the shadow of fear. This hit show explores key concepts such as confidence, values, and attitude in a dynamic way. To learn more about Sarah and her work, visit sarahmain.com.
Stay juicy. Tune in to Your Juicy Love with me, Una Drake, co-hosting monthly with Dr. Pat, and every second Monday at 12 p.m. on Transformation Talk Radio. My show, Your Juicy Love, helps you find the dynamic, life-affirming love you've always wanted. Transform your relationships and bring peace, joy, and juicy, juicy love to planet Earth. For more information, visit unadrake.com.
Hello, Spirit Fire Radio listeners. It's lovely to share this time with you. It is of the essence this entire month. We're going to be talking about time, but essentially what we're talking about is this concept of non-linearity. And essentially it's freeing. You know, if we think that every A plus B plus C, if we've got this notion that life is to be determined along a very particularly set out in a way that is predetermined, you know, it doesn't give us a lot of choice. And so we're going to be talking about the fact and the concept and the principle, the universal principle, that life is actually nonlinear this entire month. So Dorothy, but before we get back into the conversation, let's talk a bit about our organizations, because this Spirit Fire Radio is a wonderful collaboration. Would you like to say a bit about the School for Esoteric Studies?
Absolutely. So listeners, this radio program is in part the result of the organization that I'm connected to, the School for Esoteric Studies, deciding several years ago that we wanted to consciously reach out and work in partnership, in collaboration with other like-minded organizations, rather than just working in isolation. And I was fortunate enough to meet Steve and to learn about Spirit Fire, and it seemed like our two organizations could collaborate very nicely in this radio program. So I'm absolutely delighted about that. The School for Esoteric Studies is an educational nonprofit. We provide training for persons who have a spiritual practice that they wish to deepen. And you can find out more about us at esotericstudies.net. We have a number of activities, of subjective group activities, as well as the one-on-one training, which focuses on meditation, study, and service. So again, esotericstudies.net, and we're really delighted to be working with Spirit Fire.
Wonderful. Indeed, I share that same sentiment. And Spirit Fire is also an educational nonprofit, also focused on meditation, study, and service. We offer online classes on esoteric studies and spirituality. We have our own meditation program called The Practice of Living Awareness, which is a free online meditation program. We're right in the middle of a new round. It's 14 weeks, 14 steps. Online, it's free, and we've got a retreat center where we support that practice with meditation retreats and being of service, heart-filled service here at Spirit Fire Retreat Center. That's in Western Massachusetts, and you can find out more about us at spiritfire.com. So, Dorothy, just before the break, you were talking about this sort of this. Shape shift is that, wow. a new way of looking at the past and your relationship with your mom and the way in which time and memory were shifted by an awareness, by an opening up that sort of allowed the way I perceive it is sort of freed from these constraints of what seemed like a very I don't know. Well, how would you say it? Almost like a very trying relationship that moved into ease, which seems to me sort of freeing. One seems to be very much in the present and moving together. You know, it's sort of like you're in unison. It reminds me of somebody I dated in my 20s who was very charismatic and very attractive. And I was enamored, as you know, a 20-something would be, with this person's sort of beauty and vivaciousness. And he was equally enamored with what I would find out later was, you know, my sincerity and my love for simple things in life. And but I learned that he was really quite the narcissist. And he was enamored by and for many, many, many young men were enamored with him simultaneously with me. So I learned a valuable lesson and I realized, well, you know, maybe this isn't the love of my life and moved on. And, but was always grateful for this sort of awareness of wow, you know, sort of like, you know, being young and enamored and how we can paint a picture that's not really there. And I always, when I thought of him, was sort of thankful for that. Many years later, it turned out that he was in Alcoholics Anonymous and was doing that part of the program where if there are people that, you know, you feel that you need some sort of reconciliation, you call them and apologize and talk about how you feel, you know, you in your own way did them wrong. And it was a wonderful conversation because he had really lived with this sort of guilt that he had really betrayed me and that it was, you know, had felt quite a bit of regret around his actions and felt that I had negative views of him. And in fact, every time I thought of him, I thought, oh, I'm really grateful for what you showed me about, you know, about relationships and about human beings. Didn't judge him personally, but thought, oh, thanks. That was a really good lesson. I never did that again. And it was this interesting thing where as soon as we had this laugh and this, ah, there was a letting go. And in a way, we then could proceed in real time. And we could have a relationship that was not dependent on the past, but was totally in the present. So it reminds me of that story you told in the ways that we perceive our past and that we perceive our actions and that it can slow down time or speed up time, depending on whether we feel grateful or whether we have regret. This idea of even emotions or our interpretation of a situation being expansive or contractive, whether it slows us down or speeds us up. Pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Very interesting. I think, you know, just to take a slightly different step for our listeners, it may help us to remember that the whole concept of time and the way that we think about it, the way that we talk about it, the way that we measure it, has evolved over our human history. So, you know, in early times, it was the lunar calendar that was so critical. And then Julius Caesar changed that to the solar calendar, and then it became the Gregorian calendar with that whole little bit about the leap year to make a correction to the way the measurement was being done. And we started out with sundials or water clocks, and then in 1847, there was an international agreement on Greenwich Mean Time. But again, just remembering that these are agreements that humans have made with each other. It's not something objective outside of human experience. And we can, you know, you shared some of that, Steve, but, you know, I think we can all think of times where something is happening that we are either we're waiting for something that we want to have happen, or something's happening that we are finding really boring. And it just feels like time drags on. It's really taking forever. And then there's other times when we're engaged, we're excited, something's happening that we just love, and it's very stimulating. And our experience is, where's the time gone? It's gone so quickly. So while we may have an objective measure using a clock that we use in order to coordinate with other people, our own experience is quite subjective and differs very much depending upon the circumstances.
Absolutely. And as often happens on talk radio, we say, where has the time gone? Like, it's time for a break already. And how did that go? What I find interesting about what you're saying is, if, especially talking about Greenwich Mean Time, and that this was coordinated and that it was an agreement. So what is an agreement? It's like we are both in the same place at the same time. And once again, it comes back to being time being from our perspective of where we are, you know, like, and it's been proven by science that in fact we have our own personal time. So the times of the time itself, actual time, is the same if two people are at rest in respect to each other. But we've proven if they're moving, time changes. So that's the same thing if we're approaching a situation from two different aspects. And one seems to create inertia, or one seems to create excitement or momentum, that time actually appears different, but it's actually confirmed scientifically that kind of inertia and motion has something to do with time, not only as we perceive it, but scientific time. Like, for instance, scientifically, two clocks were put in planes, and the two planes were flown in opposite directions around the world, and they returned at different times. Like, for instance, I've flown to New Zealand westerly, and if you go westerly, you lose time. And I actually returned westerly as well, so essentially I lost more than a day and a half of my life. If you looked at my lifespan on a calendar, you would have one time frame, but in actuality, I didn't live that many days. Like if folks asked, you know, what did you do on February 3rd or 2016, which is that date, I'd have to say, well, it didn't exist in my life. I didn't experience that day. So it's kind of like if you wanted to add to your life and live longer, you should fly east on a plane consistently, and you'd add the speed of the plane with the Earth's rotation, and you'd add time to your life. I mean, you might take that time off your life by eating airplane food all the time, but it's just interesting that we need to be coming from the same place to have an agreement on time. So it just shows how totally, completely subjective it all is. Very interesting.
Well,
so Dorothy, before, hold that thought. Time has just eliminated. We've got to go to another break.
Okay.
Hold that thought, and we'll continue as soon as we get back.
To find answers to life's questions, you need to look within yourself. Dr. Glenna Rice brings your questionable conversations on Transformation Talk Radio each month. Tune in each month for insight into how you can live up to your full potential. Dr. Glenna is a physical therapist, certified Access Consciousness, and Access Body Class facilitator. How does it get any better than this? For more information on Dr. Glenna Rice and her work, visit glennarice.com.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Love Living Radio Ignite Your Whole Being with Emily Perkins is a show for those looking to explore the sparkling magnificence of their inner selves. Tune in every second and fourth Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific as Emily sheds a radiant light of love on the beauty and power that resides within you, discussing love in all its forms through conversations that provoke awareness, curiosity, and expansion. Emily shares the unlimited power of love. For more information or to listen to this show, visit lovelivingholistics.com.
Practice living in wholeness with the Body Tune-Up. 6 classes for $89 designed for radical self-healing and self-regeneration. Heal the deepest root of any challenge. The mental body was programmed in negativity, not good enough, separate from source, you're too much, you'll never make it. The emotional body holds all the pain and trauma of emotional suppression, all the pain from this life and life's past. The spiritual body is the place you connect with your higher power, your higher self, with the image and likeness of the One. The physical body houses and expresses the other three bodies every day. Go to CorneliaStephanie.com. Evolve, become a practitioner. We need to heal, integrate, and bring into wholeness and harmony the physical body, addressing all the other bodies in order to live in our true, authentic nature.
Living Lighter Radio with Jason and Patricia. We have an ecosystem approach to your life. Tune in weekly every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as we, Jason and Patricia, discuss what's truly holding you back. We offer you the tools you need to reach your goals and at the same time be living lighter. For more information about Living Lighter, visit www.livinglighter.org.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio. Dorothy and I have been talking about non-linearity as a universal principle, and we're going to do this for the entire month. It's going to be so interesting. I know I'm enjoying myself. Time's going very quickly. Dorothy, so just before the break, you were about to say?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking that as you were talking, Steve, about the scenario that you described, and if you think about yourself and your friend on the same calendar day, in the same time, in that sense, the two of you were not in the same time because you were in the now and your friend was in the past feeling guilty.
Right. Yeah.
Right? And so I just think that that's a really interesting example. And we can think about other things like...
Well, and Dorothy, sorry, just I hope I don't lose your train of thought, but just to add to that a bit, which is what's interesting, it tells us a lot about regret, right? Is that the potential, we talk about potential quite a bit, the potential for he and I to be co-creative in any way in a relationship was limited because he was harboring this regret and this sort of idea that, oh, I did this person wrong. So in a way, I've got to remove myself from potential. I've got to remove myself because I think, well, this person sees me in a certain way, would not be involved with me, and has all this sort of like regret and judgment and disappointment that actually creates inertia and slows down potential. It limits, right? And then we talk so much about hope and options. There's a lack of hope or a lack of options. So just interesting on ways in which being in the present and letting go of this, of those sort of very limiting views is so important to our growth and to being creative and cooperative and all the things we talk about regularly on this show.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I had my own experience where I was actually, I had a It was an alumni gathering for my old school, and I was going to give a workshop at it. And I had heard about, you know, who the attendees were going to be, and one of them was going to be someone that I had dated in high school, and it had not ended well, and had no contact really with since that time. And when I got there and I was doing the workshop, it was going very well. I was there with my partner, my brother, you know, a lot of people that I cared about, and I was having a great time. And I said to somebody, you know, I really expected so-and-so to be here, and he's not here. And they said, well, that's odd, because he was here earlier in the day, and then he just disappeared. I got an email about a week later saying that he had left intentionally because he knew I was doing the workshop, and he didn't want to disturb me by being there, because, you know, he had had this role in my life in the past, and, you know, on and on and on. And I was completely taken aback. That was so far in the past for me. It had nothing to do with my everyday reality. And the thought that after all these years, his behavior would be dictated by something that happened when we were in high school was just really odd. You know what I mean?
Yeah, from your perspective, right?
That's right, from my perspective. So we were clearly not in the same time or space. And that takes me to a couple of other things that these are the kinds of things I play with to try to help myself understand this, some of this. You know, if I look up into the night sky, I feel like I am looking at present time, but I'm not. I'm looking at light that started coming towards the earth hundreds of thousands of years ago. Or if I pick up a voicemail, if I've been away for a couple of weeks and I pick up a voicemail, it seems to me that it's happening right now, but in fact, that message that was left may be completely irrelevant now. You know, life has moved on. So we need to understand that our reality is much more malleable than we think of it. And that's a good thing when we link it back to participation, right, Steve?
Absolutely.
That we create our reality. We have a role that we can play every moment in shaping what is.
And, you know, we can't discount, as you say, that it is very important for us to have these markers. Like, time as a concept is important. It is circuitous, you know. We wake up the next morning and we can review. We can say, how was I yesterday based on the choices I made, and what will I be today, and can I change it? So that's a part of it, and it's something that is wonderful to realize that you know, the earth is spinning and every day is a new day, but that it is constantly changeable, you know, and that if you think about the fact that we are 7.6 billion souls creating our own realities on the earth, but that our reality affects the reality of everybody around us, just like the gentleman, you know, your relationship with the gentleman and your now and your interpretation of the now affected you both, you know. And we're constantly not only affecting each other, but we're affecting the entire world as a whole. You know, we're a part of this, as we often say, the one life. So imagine the difference, you know, Dorothy, in our lifetime. We have seen the population of the earth double. I mean, that's amazing, the rate of increase of souls, of human beings making choices that will affect each other and affect the way life perceives on earth. That's so many more options, so many more actions that will affect one another just since 1970. I mean, I'm rounding this off, but there were something like 3 billion people on the earth in 1970. And now, today, 7.6 billion. So it's just interesting to think that we each have an impact. It's just almost mind-boggling and astounding. And you can kind of understand why there's so much friction today, because if we go back to physics of like when two things rub up against each other, they create heat. Well, we're a lot of beings. We're a lot of choices and decisions and a lot of vibration that we're putting out there. And so it's so essential for us to be really cooperative, to try to learn how to create harmony. You know, we speak so much of harmlessness and how important that is, because if we're bumping up against each other all the time, that many people on the surface of the earth, boy, it creates heat, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, the term that comes to me is emergence. You know, instead of thinking of reality as this linear, sequential cause and effect, so, you know, if you do X, Y will automatically happen. Right. Reality is actually emergent, and the interaction of beings creates new possibilities. It may be true that if I do X, Y has a very high probability of happening, but it doesn't have 100% probability of happening. And that's the piece that is on us, that is our responsibility. We create what is happening, and we create it in interaction with each other.
Well, it's really the beauty of Buddhism, in that that idea of reality as emergent reminds me of the concept of dependent arising. They're absolutely one and the same, but the Buddha taught that this permanent, unchangeable self that is completely separate from the mind and body, it simply doesn't exist. That a self certainly exists, you know, this idea of I'd like to be happy, you know, I'd like not to suffer. That exists, but it's in constant flux, and it's set up independence of the mind and body. So again, mind and body, we have free will. We do things. We talk quite a bit about right action and right speech, that, you know, speech follows thought, energy follows thought. So we really have an influence, and it's constantly in flux. And that this idea, you know, this idea of dependent arising, it emphasizes the interconnectedness of all things, that nothing exists in true isolation, you know, that that we are interconnected to everything, and that we are dependent on each other, and the new now is always arising. It's always emerging, right? Which is, Dorothy, not to get into politics, but I can't help myself. But you consider this idea of isolation, you know, and autonomousness, you know, this idea that the U.S. right now is basically eliminating or leaving every organization designed to promote cooperation among peers and saying, nope, we're out of here, you know. And this idea that, you know, we as a system, as a unit, can progress by being cooperative, you know, with ease. We're right now watching the effects of what happens when we do act autonomously or in isolation. And it's just certainly reality will emerge as a result of that choice. But it's not, you know, interconnectedness, participation, they're essential. They're principles that really can show us the way to do this in a way that promotes, you know, evolution and creativity, as opposed to, wow, destruction, right?
Yeah. Well, one of the principles that we're going to talk about in a couple of months is that whole principle of cooperation, and the fact that that is actually how we evolve, is through cooperation, not through competition. But, you know, you mentioned evolution, and I just wanted to interject another kind of myth that's held. We talk about evolution as though it's this smooth, gradual process that just unfolds over time. But that's not actually how it happens in the physical plane. It's discontinuous. It's emergent. They talk, you know, about the Cambrian explosion, which occurred 540 million years ago, when there was a sudden emergence of hundreds of new species. So if we actually study the history of our own Earth and the evolution of our own Earth, we see that it happens in this kind of fits and starts. And if we think about our, you know, our own process, well, speaking for myself, if I'm trying to engage in a change, I will try something out and I may be successful for a while, and then I'll probably lapse back to what is more familiar for me, and then I have to try again. It's not, change is not a smooth process. So our whole concept of how our lives go together is something that, you know, I think that's what this month is about, is thinking about the fact that it is not a smooth, linear process. It's a process in which we need to be active players in choosing each moment what we want reality to be.
It's a creative process, which is so wonderful. Something to smile about, right? Not to fret about.
Right.
We're going to go to another break. And when we come back, we'll talk more about time and non-linearity. We'll be right back.
Are you your story? Or can you change your story? Can you change what you believe to be true about yourself and your circumstances as part of your healing journey? What if you were to change your expectations? What if you were to invite ease and cooperation into every day and then step back and see what happens? It might just be easier. I'm Megan Edge, and I hope that you'll join me on my new radio show, Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host Dr. Pat on Transformation Talk Radio. I look forward to seeing you there.
Want to find out more about Megan Edge? Visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Hi, I'm Steve Kramer of Spirit Fire Radio, and I believe that meditation changes everything. It leads us in the direction of greater well-being, and that's a fact. I struggled with meditation for years. I understood the principles, but I found it hard to incorporate them into my everyday life. Spirit Fire's meditation practice changed that. It's called the Practice of Living Awareness, and it's taught in 14 steps. These are 14 tools that I can use in any moment, on and off the cushion. Steps like smile, flow, and ground of being support my clarity of mind while I'm navigating the ups and downs of modern life. That's why it's called the Practice of Living Awareness. If you'd like to add meditation to your daily experience, the Practice of Living Awareness is free, online, and it's suited for any level of practitioner. Visit spiritfire.com for more information. And be sure to check out Spirit Fire's meditation retreats in Western Massachusetts. It's all there at spiritfire.com. Welcome back, listeners, to Spirit Fire Radio, continuing the conversation on non-linearity. Dorothy, I just wanted to share with the listeners, here at Spirit Fire Retreat Center, we do so many programs, and we just ended a five-day MBSR teacher training. So that is mindfulness-based stress reduction. And it's so interesting to be here to witness. My partner Tim and I are always in the kitchen. We're the cooks, and it's an open kitchen, so we're always around the people that are working very diligently on the relationship between the inner and outer. But I bring this up because it's this idea of shaping our own reality. So many times, you know, we can sort of get in life can just become rote. And so many people that engage in MBSR are really learning ways in which to confront the present as being totally malleable. Like people that have had chronic pain or have had PTSD, or there were a few people here who had OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. So the reason I bring that up is because, you know, we have to participate in this idea of shaping our own reality and in our lives, not just becoming, I wake up in the morning and I feel this pain, or I look in the mirror and I see this person, and or my actions, my brain tells my body to do this again and again and again, and my body will respond in the same way. We run the risk, really, of becoming linear beings, of having, we mentioned in the last month that we think the same thoughts again and again. We think 60,000 thoughts a day, and 95% of them are the same thought. So what's wonderful to watch people at these retreats is, you know, something will go Retreat Center, for instance, our brand new air conditioning system started spewing water into the meditation room while they're having this very, you know, beautiful, peaceful meditation. They take it into meditation and take a look, go inner, you know, go inside and say, well, what is my response to this? Is this going to disrupt my meditation, or is this something I will take into meditation? Just watching the ways in which people start to pay attention, start to really come in line with, you know, this idea that they create their own reality. And by simply paying attention, by being mindful of what is happening in the now, we make choices that then create new synapses in the brain. You know, the brain firings in the brain, it will just fire. We create pathways, and those pathways become rote. So we have to sometimes create new pathways so that we have a different engagement, we have a different response, and that our reality then, you know, it becomes elastic, as we've talked about. It becomes different so that we start to change it. And just fascinating, we had a guy who was in a very bad car accident. He's got TMJ and all kinds of problems with his neck, and he was in very bad pain when he came here. And just by simply going inside and confronting the pain, looking at his posture, paying attention to the way he's breathing, the way he's holding himself, what are his thoughts around the pain? What is his emotional response to not only the thoughts about the pain, but to the pain itself? Just creating new pathways, new ways of interpreting the now. By the time he left, he said his pain was from a 9 down to a 3. In 5 days, which is pretty amazing. So, you know, both of our organizations teach meditation, and mindfulness is just a way to align our body, emotions, and mind to sort of set us up to experience the world meditatively. That is, experience the world by being checked into it, by experiencing its fullness. And it's a wonderful sort of way to reinforce that our reality is elastic, our reality is changeable, that it's your life, you know, you are in control. It's a creative process. And by applying mind and body, you know, and knowing that you've got control over those, you really can create a new future for yourself and a new reality in the now, including pain management. It's pretty cool. Good stuff.
Well, the you know, just broadening that out a little bit, we are always creating our reality. Now, yes, we may choose to create the same, you know, the same experience over and over and over and over again. So it seems like it's just there. It's just inert, kind of. But in fact, every moment, based on how we choose to interpret what goes on around us, based on how we choose to react, we are creating our reality. And one of the, you know, when we're talking about time, one of the other concepts about time that I want to bring in is that time is abundant. It's there are some limitations in terms of how we experience it. There are certain options that don't always exist. I think of it like, you know, if I'm driving along a highway and I want to go to a particular town, there's a certain number of exits that I can get off. Now, I could keep driving for, you know, another hour or two and then turn around and come back. I'm not completely limited, but there are some constraints about what will be easier or what will be more difficult. And we talk about the ebb and flow of energy, you know, that there's certain times when it's easy to do something, and there's other times when we're kind of going against the flow and it's going to be more difficult. But we have as much time as we need.
Yes. It's always there. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, and I find that just going back, I'm thinking again about the MBSR, which is, you know, there's what happens in situations is there's no judgment. And it seems to me we've talked quite a bit about judgment and criticism, that in a sense, it pulls the frame from the movie and it holds it there static. And this idea that time is abundant, it is that when we criticize or when we judge, it's almost like it holds time still, it limits. And so it works against this idea of abundance and of choices. And with the MBSR program, anything that comes up, you watch people sort of just going into it as it is. And it creates a sort of reverence, you know, it creates this sort of openness to all the possibilities that want or could emerge. It's quite beautiful in that way, in the same way. And I also think about the story about your mother. You know, it was very limiting, your experience of her, based on the way in which you perceived the circumstances. And yet, as you came into empathy and to compassion, to the heart, and got really connected, all of a sudden it became, there was a largesse to the way you talk about it. You know, it's bigger. There's now an abundance to actually your experience of that, of your childhood, that just by the way in which you were thinking about it was limited, right? So again, creating our own experience with time, right?
Right. And I really love what you just said, Steve, that about criticism constricting or freezing our experience, because it's very true. If I, and I think that I want to distinguish between feedback that we are requested to give and our own criticism, where we believe that we're better than someone else. You know,
yeah.
We think we know better. And if I am being critical in that way of someone else, then I'm creating a filter that I'm going to continue to see that person through. And that's part of what you were describing about how I was relating to my mother,
yeah,
when I was younger. And that's true. I do constrain.
Yeah, it pulls us out of the flow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So, you know, we're really at the end of the show, Dorothy, but we're going to have so much to talk about because it's going to be so inspiring. But I look forward to talking about some of Stephen Hawking's work. And he describes time as being shaped like a globe. Like, if you are on the surface of the earth, because it's round and circuitous, there is no beginning and no end. You can't find a beginning to the earth or an end if you're on the surface of it. You know, by observing it, you can look at its edges. But when you're on it, you'll never find a beginning or an end. And we'll go deeper into that, I'm sure, this month. But it's interesting when we think about judgment and criticism in the same way as we used to think about time, that there's a beginning of time, there's a beginning of the world, and an end. It's like judgment puts a beginning. This is what I think about you. This is what I have come to a conclusion about, and this is where we stop. So it pulls you out of the flow. It puts an edge to it. And what we're learning and what we will uncover, I'm sure, every week of this month is that there really is no end or edge that is predefined. It is not only in flux, but it goes on infinitely. It is this constant forming and sort of efflorescing of our own reality. Quite exciting and lovely. A little poetry for the end of the show, Dorothy.
Okay.
Well, listeners, next week we are going to talk about the illusion of linearity, sort of the limitations that are inherent. We talked a bit about it on this show, but we're going to go deeper into it on week two of our theme. Dorothy, thanks so much, as always, for bringing your life's experience to the table. So wonderful and dynamic, and I look forward to next week.
Me too.
All right. Thanks, listeners.
Thank you for listening to Spirit Fire Radio. Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern, for your weekly guide to purposeful living and practical spirituality. Join hosts Steve Kramer and Dorothy Riddle as they shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in your everyday life. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. To learn more, visit spiritfireradio.com.